Yeah, that's fine. If I can have you, please raise your hands. I do solemnly swear or affirm that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of California against all enemies, foreign and or domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of California, that I will take this obligation freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, and that I will well and faithfully discharge the duties upon which I'm about to enter.
I do.
Thank you. Now if I can have you sign all three. Mm-hmm. There's Katie's, there's Daniel's, and there's
Thank you.
Thank you.
Lena.
Leanna.
Leanna?
Yes.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your patience. Let the City of Goleta Planning Commission begin Monday, January 26th, 2015. Pledge of Allegiance, please. Call to order. Thank you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, for liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Can I have a roll call for the commission, the full commission? Thank you.
Commissioner Fuller?
Present.
Commissioner Jenkins?
Present.
Commissioner Maynard?
Present.
Vice Chair Anand?
Here.
Chair Daniels?
Present.
Thank you.
Thank you. At this time, I want to open up the public forum to anyone who has a need to talk to us, but not on any of the agenda items that we have tonight. Is there anybody out there that wants to talk to us, but not talk to us on the agenda items tonight? I see no hands. And so I will close the public forum. Thank you. Linda, A1, please.
Item before A1 is amendments or adjustments to the agenda, please.
Thank you.
There are no amendments or adjustments.
Thank you. A1, please.
Item A1 is for approval, the Planning Commission minutes for the Planning Commission meeting of December 8th, 2014.
Move approval, Mr. Chair.
Okay, no discussion necessary. Do I get a second?
Second.
I have a correction. I believe I abstained on the housing element vote. And it has it down as unanimous. Do you remember that?
I do.
Okay, thank you.
I concur with that, Mr. Chair.
So with that correction.
Correction adopted by the maker of the motion.
And the second.
Yeah, it's right there. Is that what you're talking about?
Abstain? Oh, yeah, I am. Here, I read it differently in a different... That's right.
Okay. Okay?
Yeah, sorry.
That
was for the minutes, actually.
That was for the minutes. Okay.
For the housing element adoption.
Mm-hmm. And okay.
Motion vote.
You were right. An aye there.
Right, and I was that's what I abstained on was a housing element.
We're talking about on page 4 of the minutes?
Page 3.
Page 3.
Page 3.
Mm-hmm. Motion, vote. Wait.
Yeah, the bottom of page 3.
Okay. Or was
close
it the bottom?
Close to the bottom.
Of page.
The vote itself. It says aye for your for you, Fuller.
There's two motions here.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, I abstained on the housing element. So I don't believe I abstained on the CEQA because that's a fact, but I did abstain. So it would be at the top of page 4.
Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, top of page 4. With that correction.
The motion that we approve the minutes with the correction to the vote on page 4.
And I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Point of order, Winnie, please. Can our new commissioner actually do that?
Commissioner Maynard, you may not. You can abstain from the voting on the minutes.
Okay, abstain.
Okay, I have the public hearing 401, one abstention, four yeses. Thank you. Linda, could you read B1, please?
Yes, Chair Daniels. Item B1 is a public hearing on the housing element related zoning ordinance.
Thank you. Do we have a staff presentation?
Yes, we do.
Ms. Wells, nice seeing you.
Is this working?
Yeah.
Test. Okay. Good.
Barely.
All right. Good evening, commissioners. Tonight's item is a recommendation with a resolution and attached as an exhibit is an ordinance for some housing element related regulations and definitions that are required by state law. And we're going to, our presentation kind of walks you through why we're doing this and what it means. I wanted to get some administrative things out of the way. There's a public comments on the dais and also available to the public. There's also been a handout with some relevant housing law and then also the policies of our adopted housing element that are referenced so that you can use that as a tool to make it a little bit easier. Yes?
When would you like me to open the public hearing?
I think that we do the presentation first, and that way we can do a dialogue back and forth.
No. Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
And then after we finish our back and forth dialogue, then you can have open the hearing for public comment and then deliberate.
Very good. Thank you.
Sure thing. So also administrative. The City Council, as you I'm sure know, adopted the housing element on December 16th, and we do have a state housing and community development, HCD is the acronym, draft in compliance with state law, and that's posted on their website. So I think we may have talked about that before. That's a coveted certification statement by the state, so we crossed a big hurdle. And with the packet that's before you tonight is to help us get across the second hurdle, which is their second review of the housing element that's been adopted. I wanted to also just run by the other kind of was a companion and tandem project, and that's the new zoning ordinance project. Staff spent a year doing the modules, and then we've been working on the draft based on information we learned from the modules. And we also prepared a lengthy comparison table of the standards that are current in our regulations compared to what's in the administrative draft. So that's taking some time, it's some 100 pages, and we'll have a guide for it And then when we're finished with our internal review of the administrative draft, we'll release all of that together. And I kind of point that out because the timing of that project, the new zoning ordinance project, is taking longer than is anticipated. So we would have otherwise taken these proposed definitions and regulations that are in the ordinance would have been embedded in that project and then theoretically could have been already adopted. And but the timing, because of the state law timing of state HCD review of documents, necessitates this item tonight. But we'll talk about that a little bit more. I wanted to introduce John Douglas, sitting next to me to my left. He's our housing element consultant and has been working with us, staff, and also the city attorney on putting this packet together. He worked as he did with the housing element. He's also working with the Dayton Bhatia, who's our zoning ordinance consultant. So we, you know, this packet kind of originated from what was in the zoning ordinance modules and then it has matured since then. But as it's a connected project with the zoning ordinance, Dayton Bhatia has also been involved. And then, of course, Jennifer Carmen, the planning director, and Andy Newkirk is here. And they were instrumental in getting this packet together. It was actually quite a lot of work to make sure that we're doing everything exactly the way the government code says, but not going beyond that. And I think our current planning manager, Lisa Brasi, is also here in the audience. We already talked about the procedures for the public hearing. So I just wanted to make sure it's clear. So you ask questions along the way as John and I do this presentation, and then, or you can save your questions up after, however you would like. And so with that, I will just jump right into the presentation. So the purpose is to, first starting with the implementing City Council's direction. When they adopted the housing element, they also said, make sure you have whatever regulations that need to be in place so that HCD can continue that certification statement that they had already posted on their website. And so, of course, the second purpose is to meet the state's expectations for final certification. And what does that mean? What do those expectations mean? It means complying with certain sections of state and federal law. So this ordinance that's attached as the Exhibit 1 to the resolution is needed now in advance of the new ordinance project for all of those reasons that I just stated. So here are the topics that are addressed. And after an inventory and a look at the law, that these were the issue areas that we determined needed to be advanced out from the new zoning ordinance project. And I'm going to turn it over to John Douglas. He is the expert, and I think I've said this before, he's had, I think, over 80 housing element certifications, also very familiar with the local housing and affordable housing needs because he's worked on other local housing elements. So he's the expert, and he is going to provide us with the presentation.
Good evening, Mr. Douglas.
Good evening, Chair Daniels and Commissioners. It's nice to be back with you again. Before I launch into the details, I'd just like to publicly recognize the good work that Andy Newkirk has done over the past several weeks. I appreciate his thorough research and very thoughtful discussion that he and I have had on these topics.
We thank you for that.
Okay. As an overriding thought here, the topics that you see in front of you are sometimes referred to as regulations for special needs housing. This is one of the two or three big important issues that comes into play with every housing element update. Another thought I want to start off with is that there is a large body of state law, both legislative in the state codes and also court decisions, that limits what cities and counties can do with respect to special needs housing. And so on most of these, there is very little latitude in terms of how cities can regulate these. On some issues, there is a little bit of latitude. And so as we go through this, I'll try to indicate where it's simply a black and white requirement of state law and those issues where there may be a little bit of latitude. So with that, let me start off with density bonus. Density bonus has been a requirement of state law for a long time, 20, 30 years at least. Basically, what density bonus law says is when a developer agrees to provide affordable housing as part of a project, then local government must allow a density increase over and above what the otherwise maximum density would be under the general plan and the zoning. That's basically the requirement. The law has been amended several times over the years. The most recent iteration of state density bonus law requires that cities grant up to a maximum of 35% density increase above the otherwise allowable maximum. There are criteria that's laid out in the law in terms of the percentage of affordability, the depth of affordability, very low, low, moderate, and so forth. And then there's also some requirement for incentives and concessions. When I say incentives and concessions, what I'm referring to as is deviations from development standards, such as maybe a setback or a parking ratio or something like that, in order to make the project feasible. So what the ordinance that's in front of you basically incorporates what state law requires. It's a lot of procedures, in other words, who does what, when, and then there's the substance of it in terms of how much density bonus, what are their qualifying criteria, and so forth. In terms of the threshold, in order to qualify for any density bonus, you see on the screen there, when a developer agrees to provide at least 5% of the units affordable at the very low income level, then they qualify for a 20% density bonus, and then there's a sliding scale up to the 35% maximum. So at the very low income level, 5% gets you a 20% density bonus, and then the sliding scale progresses up to the 35% when a developer provides 11%. And the state law specifies how many additional units at each progression in the percentage of affordability. For low-income units, the minimum threshold is 10%. Sliding scale up to 20% of the units, they qualify for the full maximum 35% density bonus. For for-sale condo units, the minimum threshold is 10% moderate income units in the condo project. The threshold is, I'm sorry, I'm looking at my slide because I'm wondering, I think there's a typo in the, I think there's a typo in that moderate income row there, but the requirement is if 10% moderate income, I'm sorry, I was just reading it wrong. If the project includes 10% of the units for moderate income, they qualify for a 5% density bonus. I apologize. If they provide sliding scale up to 40% of the units affordable at the moderate level, then they qualify for the full 35% density bonus. And then for a senior citizen project, it's just a flat 20% density bonus. So again, to summarize, this incorporates the requirements of state law, does not deviate from it, and this is mostly a black and white requirement of state law. Let me pause there and see if there's any questions before I move on to the next topic.
Mr. Johnson, I have a question, if nobody else does right now. do you use a rounding up factor when we're talking about 20% or 5% bonus density? You know, if you've got four units, you know, then, you know, you've got 5% bonus density if you're doing, you know, middle income or moderate income. And you know, that's not a whole lot, right? I mean, that...
to be honest, I would have to go back and refresh my memory in the in the state law to see if it's a round up or a round down.
Okay. That would be important.
Yes. Okay. I mean, and so because it incorporates state law, if it is a round down, then that's what the city would implement.
Right, exactly.
Conversely, exactly. Round up.
I can interject here. On page 6 of 12 of the government codes that are handed out, near the top of the page, number 2, section B, it's the second sentence. All density calculations resulting in a fractional unit shall be rounded up to the next whole number.
Thank you, Ms. Director.
If there are no other questions.
I was going to add that since, at least my memory is, the city of Goleta has never issued a granted a density bonus because we've never had an application for one, with one exception. There was a project that applied for a density bonus, and then they withdrew that request for a density bonus. It's pretty tricky if you read the requirements. And so that all this time, we have not yet granted a density bonus. If someone came in and they applied for it, we would have to go through these steps and procedures that are outlined in the law.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions now? Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Did I get that wrong?
Mr. Douglas.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Douglas?
No problem. Next topic, emergency shelters. Just to clarify what we're talking about here, in this context, emergency shelter means a year-round facility for homeless people, as opposed to a temporary facility after a natural disaster like a fire or a flood. This is a permanent type of facility that these regulations apply to. Several years ago, state law was amended to establish a definition for emergency shelter and also require that every jurisdiction in the state adopt regulations that allows emergency shelters in at least one zoning district. And so what's before you tonight is would update the city's city's definition for emergency shelters to comport with state law. That is all that is before you tonight with regard to this topic. If there are no questions, next topic is farm worker housing. Again, definitions are included in the draft ordinance tonight that would be consistent with state law. What state law requires is that qualifying farm worker housing projects of a certain size, and that is up to no more than 12 units or 36 beds if it's a group quarters bunkhouse type situation, must be regulated the same as agriculture in any zoning district where agriculture is permitted. So in other words, it's treated the same as an agricultural use as opposed to a housing use or something like that. So that, again, the definitions that are before you tonight incorporate those provisions of state law by mirroring state law in terms of the definition of what is a farm worker, what is farm worker housing, and what is a farm worker housing complex. State law also says that if you have no more than 6 farm workers living together in a housing unit, that has to be treated the same as a single family housing unit as opposed to a boarding house or something like that. So that is the extent of what's before you with regard to farm worker housing.
Quick question, Mr. Douglas. I want to be clear here. Are you looking for the commission to speak to each and every one of these definitions?
And
review them, and you know, either say yes or you know have questions about them.
Just if you have questions of clarification, because as I mentioned at the outset, nearly everything that's before you tonight is required under state law, and
sure.
There's very little latitude.
Sure. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Moving on to the next topic, which is referred to as reasonable accommodation. This comes out of state and federal fair housing law, which basically requires cities to adjust or modify their planning and zoning requirements when it's necessary to accommodate a person with a disability. And this is a procedural requirement. This ordinance does not specify what changes have to be approved. It specifies what the process is for requesting a change. And the overriding idea here is to simplify the process so that what might otherwise require a variance with an expensive application fee and public hearings and that sort of thing, instead it can be processed by a relatively simple administrative process without a large fee and without a large length of time required. There are two possible situations here. One is when the modification stands on its own. It's not associated with some other development application or a conditional use permit or something like that. If it's standing alone, then this ordinance would allow the director to make the decision on that based on the criteria and standards and findings that are set forth in applicable law and in the ordinance. If this request is associated with some development application that requires its own permit approval track, then it would be bundled up and the reasonable accommodation would be decided on by whoever the decision-making body is, if it's your planning commission, if it's the city council. So that is the essence of reasonable accommodation.
If I could, Mr. Chair, just for clarification, now I thought I read in there that there would be no additional fee. You said not with a significant additional fee, but is this the reasonable accommodation where if it's bundled with an existing application, no additional fee can be charged?
Correct me if I'm wrong, Andy or Ann, but there would be no fee if it is a standalone request. And if it's bundled with some other application, then it would be whatever the fee is associated with that application.
Right, no additional fee.
Okay,
I just wanted to make sure, because you had mentioned fee in that, and as I understood it, there fee protected, if you will.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Douglas, just a practical application. Let's say someone owns a single-family home. They now have a disabled person living with them, and they need to build a ramp and a roof structure over that ramp in the side yard. Is that what we're talking about here, that type of accommodation?
That's a good example, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
If no other questions.
I don't see any. Please continue.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. All right. The next topic is residential care facilities. There's quite a bit of language in state law regulating residential care facilities and limiting cities' discretion in the review and approval of residential care facilities. And so what's before you is definitions that comport with state law. The key distinction is that small care facilities are considered those with no more than six residents, not counting the staff or assistants. And then seven or more clients or residents would be considered a large facility. State law contains a protection for many types of small residential care facilities and limitations on how cities regulate those. Generally speaking, these small state-licensed care facilities must be treated the same as any single-family residential use. And state law allows cities to establish different sets of regulations for large facilities. And so what's before you is simply including a definition for those two different kinds of care facilities, along with the state limitation on treating small licensed facilities different than single family uses.
Mr. Douglas, if I may, does this mean, having just read that with you, that the state took out the 12th person as a second lower part all by itself before it went up to the bigger, larger facilities? But wasn't there six and then up to 12 as well?
Before I answer that, let me say that, there is a large body of state law governing a number of different types of care facilities, and so I can't claim to be an expert on every aspect of state law that relates to all of those different care facilities. I am not personally familiar with any exemption that the state grants to care facilities with up to 12. Now, there are daycare-type facilities that are not residential. There where people come during the day. And I'm not as familiar with those regulations. There might be something in state law regarding daycare that has a threshold of 12.
Okay. Well, thank you. I have been, for many decades here, I've been dealing with permitting and on, you know, up to 12 as a larger facility, but not the big ones. You know, the big ones, the Marvia, and, you know, wherever else you want to pick. I mean, you know, those are very large. Now we're just going with six or above, as I see it.
Okay, the next topic is transitional and supportive housing. The law was changed back in 2007 at the same time that the emergency shelter law was changed to basically say that transitional housing and supportive housing, cities must regulate those the same as other residential uses of that same type in that same zone. So the draft ordinance that's before you has definitions consistent with state law for supportive housing, transitional housing, and this phrase called target population. And the reason why target population is in there is because it's part of the definition for supportive housing. So if you read the definition of supportive housing, it has that phrase target population in there. And basically what it means is disabled persons with low incomes. So that's, in essence, the target population for supportive housing. It's intended for people who have some sort of a disability and they need assistance in their daily living or daily care. The transitional housing definition is not as restrictive. It's aimed at low-income persons who might otherwise be homeless if they didn't have a transitional housing facility. And the definition specifies that it's at least 6 months occupancy. Typically, these programs run from 6 months to 2 years, and they try to get the people on their feet and transitioned into permanent housing. So what's before you is simply incorporating definitions to be consistent with state law on this topic.
Mr. Douglas? What you had said was in the text here is not with respect to the target population, and clearly the target population. So I'm wondering. it says transitional and supportive housing, but nothing on target population. And I thought I heard you say
that was included.
Sorry. Chair Daniels, if I might clarify, it's not on the slide, but it's in the ordinance itself, which is page 4 of the ordinance, which is an exhibit to the resolution, or big page 18.
All right, that wraps up the substance of the proposed amendments. With regard to CEQA compliance, staff believes that these amendments don't constitute a project under CEQA because they don't, they're not associated with any physical development. They're bringing cities' definitions into conformance with state law. At the such time as a physical development is brought forward, then it gets reviewed for conformance with CEQA. As Ann mentioned in her opening remarks, these regulations are directly related to the housing element, and we started this process about 9 months ago, had a number of public meetings and workshops related to the housing element and also these special needs regulations that are directly related to the housing element. So the process would be your commission, after taking public testimony and deliberating, would forward a recommendation to the City Council for final review, and then City Council would conduct a public hearing and then make a final decision on these ordinances. They are directly related to the housing element, and their adoption helps to support and facilitate the final certification of the housing element. So with that, I will stop and ask if there are any other questions before you take public testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Douglas. Any questions by the commission?
Oh, there are a couple more slides before we're finished with our presentation.
Ms. Wells, please, please continue.
Before I talk about the state's review of our housing element, I wanted to talk about the format of the ordinance that's before you this evening. The ordinance would be what we call a standalone ordinance. So if someone applied, let's say, for a reasonable accommodation for a ramp, the example that you used before, they would go to the counter, and the planning staff and building staff and everyone would use the ordinance and companion in tandem with the other regulations, which are the Goleta Municipal Code and then the Inland and Coastal Zoning Ordinance that we're working on updating now so that we can codify that and move it into our municipal code. So we still have a ways to go on that, but I just wanted to explain that if it's, you know, recommended to the council and the council adopts the ordinance, then it will be a standalone ordinance. We'll have a number, and then all the planners, and it's online, gets inserted into their binders so that they have them, because there's other standalone ordinances that we'll work with. So I wanted to explain how that works physically, because it's a little bit different than what you would otherwise expect. So I wanted to...
Ms. Wells, would you codify them, or would we codify them through the City Council?
Ultimately, not now. We wouldn't do that. We would do that when this gets integrated with the larger zoning ordinance project, and then at the time that it's adopted, then the codification process would occur, and it would be under Title 17 of the municipal code.
Thank you. So we don't expect it to be a freestanding ordinance for that long. Provided we stay on schedule with the code. Mm-hmm.
So. Very good.
Chair Daniels?
Yes.
Yeah, and so you'll also have the sections of the density bonus state law in here that's referenced in the ordinance, because you include the state law by reference for standards, and so part of the standalone ordinance will also include, you know, the state law that's being referred to.
Well, what's before you in the packet before you with this standalone ordinance is literally what it says in it, which is a reference and points you in the direction of the state law.
Right.
Correct. And when we release the full draft zoning ordinance, or the what will become Title 17 of the Goleta Municipal Code someday, all of these things will be embedded in it. There'll be more public comment on them, so they theoretically could change again, as long as we're not altering the intention of state law. But whether it gets embedded directly, so that you know, right now it's a two-step process. Someone sees that reference, and they would have to go to that section of state law to figure out how to apply for a density bonus, right? Two-step. We may or may not do that. Right now, that's how it would be for this interim. Part of that.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
Any commissioners have questions?
Mr. Jenkins, do you go first this time? Okay. Mr. Chair, thank you. A couple of questions and some observations. On page 2 of 5, or the big page 2, under density bonus, I think there's a typo there. And it says in the third sentence down, land use authority to grant a density bonuses to developers.
Commissioner, can you state the small and large numbers, please?
Sure. Big page 2, little page 2 of 5. Under discussion, density bonuses. I think it should say grant a density bonus to developers or grant density bonuses to developers. One of the two.
Commissioner? Mm-hmm. Chair?
Please.
Actually, I read it. There, you can have multiple density bonuses for different amounts, so that would be plural.
To say a density bonuses?
Oh.
A should probably be removed.
Yeah. There you go.
Density bonuses.
Yeah. Okay. Great. All right.
I should clarify. It's this. This is the staff report. So whatever action is taken tonight.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But it's going to the city council. I'm just thinking. Mm-hmm. You know, clean it up.
Thank you.
Just a question, and I know we're under state guidelines to address this, so it's not anything more than just a curiosity. But say under farm worker housing. If we have a property that has been rezoned and it is now, you know, let's say supposed to be residential versus ag, and you have a request by the property owner who's operating the ag to put in farm worker housing, does that trigger a problem?
Did you say if it had been rezoned from residential to ag?
No, if it's been rezoned from ag to residential, but so you have a non-conformance, you have a legal non-conformity, and they're wanting to basically expand their operation to build farm worker housing.
The state law goes with whatever the zoning designation is. So if the zoning is ag, then they're entitled to request a permit from state HCD and to come to the city to permit it as an agricultural use.
Right, but if the zoning has changed and there are legal nonconformance, they're still able to do their ag operation, but it's now zoned residential.
Yeah.
Can they do the farm worker housing?
Well, then the housing would be reviewed under the residential standards of the zoning.
I see. Okay. Under, let's see, large page 16, little page 2, under section 5, where it's talking about the density bonus again. And this is just a polite request. It says, set forth in government code 65915. I called staff and just asked, you know, can we see this? And I think you're already on it as well as to do that. But I think in the future, if it could say state law or something, so I know that, okay, we're not talking about a city guideline or a city ordinance here, but that it's state, and then I'm going to know that, okay, I just got to back off and not worry about it. So that could be helpful. And then just again, kind of in the area of just curiosity, under emergency shelters, farm worker housing, residential care facilities, which I know we do have, but under all these topics, do we have existing uses in the city right now, or are these just what-ifs and under state law we have to provide for it if it comes to us? But I'm just curious, do we have farm worker housing currently in the city? Or
we've had some attempts at establishing it. We do have the farm worker housing as group housing in single-family areas,
okay.
So it's a little bit different, the ones that I'm aware of.
All right.
Fairview Gardens?
Can I say something? At People's Self-Help Housing, we have units for.
Not quite yet.
When the public hearing opens.
Can you wait till public hearing, please? Appreciate your concern.
All right. And let's see. Oh, under, on large page 19, Section 7, under paragraph A, we're talking about this request for reasonable accommodation must be made on a form prescribed by the city for that purpose. And I'm just curious, as an example of that form, is that delineated in Section 8? Is that the example that we're talking about, where it talks about applicant's name?
Yes, Section 8 is the content of that form.
Okay, all right. So where it's talking about a form, that's the answer. So it lists it. And then similarly on page 20, under Section 9A at the top, at the bottom, the zoning administrator must determine the appropriate procedure to evaluate the applications. Should we be more specific than that? Should we be offering an example, maybe listing options? If there's a waiting list type of thing, what should we offer some additional information here?
Yeah, this is getting to the question of whether it's a freestanding application or whether it's bundled with another. And so the intent here is, if there's another application that's associated with this reasonable accommodation, that the director would determine who is the appropriate decision maker and hearing process.
I see. Okay, so it's not prioritizing applicants?
No.
Okay,
no.
All right, thank you. All right, and then just one final question is, in the old regulations from the county, you know, both coastal and inland, we have on large page 29 in particular, you have again density bonuses, definitions, and information. There's five pages here, and that's been condensed into just a couple of small little sections, and I'm just curious as to how all this language, are we just basically abandoning this language in favor of a much more streamlined and condensed version?
Go ahead.
So in 1997, the county chose to actually put the government code citation and put it into and embed it within their code.
Okay.
An alternative to that is just directing the person to that code reference. And one of the arguments for doing it that way is, if the state were to change that regulation, then you're always going to be pointing them to the correct density bonus law, which would supersede even this. That said, it's a two-step process, so there's pros and cons of doing it either way. But right now, at this point, we're just pointing them to state law and would replace this.
That makes a lot of sense.
And just to add, there are continuing discussions over the philosophy of including the government code in the new zoning ordinance versus just the reference. And because we will have an opportunity, once everything's merged together, that issue will come up again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's all I have for now.
Yes, not hearing anybody else want to talk to Mrs. Wells or Mr. Douglas. Can I open up the...
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. I did have a couple questions.
I'm sorry.
Sorry.
Please.
First of all, Mr. Douglas, you weren't here when we went through Planning Commission and advanced the housing element. I don't believe Mr. Douglas was here.
Yes.
But at any rate,
yes.
I want to congratulate you on the progress and all of the staff, of course. It is a milestone for the city to be at this point on the precipice of having a certified housing element. It is a wonderful accomplishment. A couple things that I would like to get a little information on. First of all, as I understand, when the housing element went to the city council, there were some changes or additions compared to what the Planning Commission advanced to them. And I'd like to know if you can tell me what those specifics were. And then secondarily, Mr. Douglas, you mentioned that there were some areas where there was some discretion. You didn't point out any areas of some discretion in my listening. So where might that be? And if I could, Ms. Wells, maybe was it in the development agreement area that the language was changed from what we advanced to the city council? Or does it? But I understood there was some significant discussion and some change. and I didn't understand what that was.
So there was a lot of, there was public comment, and there was a discussion on the concept of land value recapture, and that was not taken out of the, oh, it was taken out. We went back and forth quite a bit. So it was taken out of the housing element, that the concept of land value recapture.
In via a development agreement?
Well, it's just that the concept isn't included, but the rationale behind that decision by the city council is we already kind of do that through development agreements. So it was sort of a redundant policy with practice.
Okay. Well, I also understood something to the effect that we had a, there will be a development agreement in the event of rezoning or redesignation of land use.
It's not in the housing element per se, but staff has made it an internal policy that is what we like to see when we come forward with larger projects. From now on, we usually do ask for a development agreement as we move forward. But during the recapture discussion, that was very much the development agreement was talked about and how it functions with projects in the city, because it was looked at as the land recapture policy was double dipping on whatever's negotiated through the development agreement plus then the land recapture payment.
Oh, okay. Okay, so that was what the discussion.
Right.
And that recapture portion of it was just totally eliminated from it?
Right, and some applicants choose as part of their application to bring in something more beyond what they need to do or are required to do. So they're bringing it forward that way because for whatever reason is motivating that particular development. And so anyway, the land value recapture just didn't seem to fit for our circumstances and the way that we work with our applicants and what's the pleasure of the city council. So yes, that was taken out.
Okay, thank you.
And with regard to the question about where is there some latitude or discretion on the part of cities, I think as a general statement, I might say that for most of these topics, the state law establishes a minimum requirement. And so cities have the latitude to go beyond what that minimum is. So for example, in density bonus, state law says must allow up to 35%, but if a city decided that it's a good idea to offer a 50% density bonus, they could do that. They have the discretion. With regard to emergency shelters, there is no latitude with regard to what's before you tonight in terms of the definition. There is some latitude in other regulations and development standards that apply to emergency shelters, and those will most likely be coming to you as part of the comprehensive zoning code. With farmworker housing, again, I would view it as a minimum. If the city felt that it's a good idea to allow farmworker housing in other zones besides agriculture, then cities can do that as part of their land use powers. With regard to reasonable accommodation, I think the flexibility or latitude has to do with the decision-making process and whether it's a zoning administrator or a planning manager or a planning director who makes the decision. With regard to care facilities, again, state law says up to six, cities must allow it as just a family use. But if the city thought that it was a good idea to allow seven or eight or nine or some other number, then they could do that. With regard to transitional supportive, there is no latitude that I can think of in that topic for what's before you tonight.
Thank you.
You have one?
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah, Chair Daniels. On page 16, section 5, last sentence, the city manager or designee, and this is regarding density bonuses, is authorized to promulgate administrative policies and procedures to implement this section. Will we have, or will anybody have any oversight over those policies and procedures? I mean, is anybody going to review those, or are we giving full carte blanche to the city administrator to decide how to do that and what to do with them?
One comment I would have regarding this section, there's a couple of sections in the ordinance that are not part of the regulations. They're preliminary kinds of statements that are part of the boilerplate of an ordinance, but they're not part of the actual zoning regulations. So this is basically saying that the city manager will implement the policy of the council that's consistent with this ordinance.
You okay with that?
Yeah, as long as it's consistent.
And again, it defaults to state law. So you know, the language of the ordinance, it's, I mean, the regulations defer or incorporate state law. And so the determination would be made at the staff level, you know,
right.
What does it take to be consistent?
The devil's in the details. Yes. So, you know, I'm just kind of concerned. I mean, I understand what the state law is. I understand we have to implement the state law. And so I'm just, you know, concerned what the promulgation of it might be, the policies might be. You know,
yes.
They're just open to, you know, the administrator to do. So, you know, who knows? I don't know. We'll see. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Douglas. At this time, I'd like to open the public hearing. And ma'am, if you'd like to speak, if you can fill out a speaker form and give it to the clerk, that would be great. I have two requests to speak here. First one is Reverend Doug Miller. Thank you.
Chairperson Daniels and commissioners, very honored to speak here today.
I represent
the Greater Santa Barbara Clergy Association and a group called HEAL, which deals with our friends and neighbors without homes here in the Goleta and Isla Vista area. First of all, welcome to the new commissioners, and you've got a hard job. Thank you, staff, Ann and Jennifer, for what you've done, especially Mr. Douglas. I've attended most of the meetings, and he's been very, very professional. I'm very proud of what he's come up with, and I'm very proud of this ordinance. It represents compassion. Our concern is that, as was just mentioned, that you as a city might go beyond the minimum. I think Chair Daniels mentioned that 12 at one time was a possibility. I know that'll never be a reality, but again, we hope that Goleta would go beyond just the minimum. And we do appreciate, however, the special concern that's been taken for the poor and the homeless in this area. And we think that this is a very good ordinance. We especially like the definition of family. And it represents great sophistication. And I know that even in Santa Barbara, the law was passed about how that is to be defined. And I appreciate that that was reflected in this particular ordinance. So thank you very much. And we support it 100%.
Thank you. Next and my last speaker request is Steve Fort.
Yep. Thank you, Chair Daniels and commissioners. My name is Steve Fort. I work for Suzanne Elge Planning and Permitting. I've also recently gotten involved with a group called the Coastal Housing Coalition, but I'm really just here for a clarification after reading through the documents related to the ag. The farm worker housing. I like Chair Daniels, I have worked with permitting projects in the past, and I'm just curious regarding the discussion about an HCD permit required for a farm worker housing. I was not familiar with that in the past, and I was just requesting a clarification that is there indeed an HCD permit, say if an ag operator wants to build a single unit on their property for just a worker and a family, perhaps. And that's it. Thank you.
Appreciate your comments. Thank you. You're looking at me. Did you wanted to speak before. I'm just giving you... Yes.
You can actually do it after,
okay.
If you like, if you just identify yourself.
Yeah. I didn't want to neglect you.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Well, I was just trying to offer some information. I'm Rochelle Rose. I work for People Self-Help Housing. And you do have some farm worker housing in Goleta, Elwood Apartments. There's a couple of several units in there. So they were built quite some time ago. But it's included with other categories of low-income housing. So hope that answers. And it, I don't know if that helps you at all, Steve.
Thank you. Seeing no other speaker requests, I will close the public hearing.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Point of order. Should we allow staff to be able to respond to any public comment?
Yes, staff will. Thank you. At this time, we have a question regarding agricultural farmwork housing. Mr. Douglas?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I think maybe the way I would approach it is when an applicant comes to the city wanting to build a certain type of project, the city would look to find what is the relevant regulations that relate to that application. So if someone owns a five-acre ranchette and they want to have some staff live on the property, then one opportunity might be a second unit. And so, you know, second units are permitted in single-family residential zones, so maybe that's the appropriate set of regulations. If a an organization wants to build a larger farmworker housing complex, then a different set of regulations apply. The state has established some extensive law governing farmworker housing complexes, primarily focused on health and safety issues, electrical safety, wastewater, and so forth. And so the legislature has delegated to HCD, Housing and Community Development, the authority to issue permits and monitor those kinds of complexes. And in some cases, HCD will enter into agreements with counties to take over some of the monitoring and enforcement and inspection activities associated with farmworker housing. So, yes, there is something called a permit to operate that state HCD issues for farmworker housing complexes, but I would say that it's not required in every single case where a farmworker is living on a property.
Thank you, Mr. Douglas. And just for clarity, I'm assuming that you're talking about seven and more units.
Yes.
Right. Okay. Got it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Please.
So just as a follow-up question to that, if an agricultural property wanted to build a residence that had for six or fewer, but it's not on residential land, it's on agricultural land, would they be allowed to build a single housing unit for a smaller group? I'm assuming that the answer is no.
Good. Yeah. In planning, you know, it depends is the answer to so many questions. For six or fewer, well, first of all, under state second unit law, mm-hmm. Any zoning district that allows a single family house typically also allows a second unit subject to certain standards and regulations. And a group of farm workers, six or fewer farm workers mm-hmm. living together, is considered a single family use. And so I don't want to be held to this absolutely, but I would say there is a possibility mm-hmm. that kind of a housing situation might be permitted under second unit law. Mm-hmm. Because the law that relates to six or fewer specifically refers to residential zones, not mm-hmm. agricultural zones. We got the two different situations, mm-hmm. residential zones and zones that allow mm-hmm. agriculture. So how's that for a little bit of a weasel-worded answer?
I have one other follow-up question. The mention of the people self-help housing, that, my understanding, that would not be farm worker housing, though farm workers live there because it would be under the residential codes. So that might be a supportive housing or another form, but wouldn't be farm worker housing. Is that correct?
Yes. In many agricultural areas, there are housing complexes, rental complexes, that are occupied mostly by farm workers, but they're not processed as a farm worker housing complex.
We usually don't stump them. So, so that was a good job. Thank you for that. Do we have any other discussion with city staff here, commissioners?
Please. Mr. Chair, I don't mean to skip ahead, but seeing that there isn't any other discussion, could I make a motion?
Chair Daniels, can you close the public hearing first?
I did.
No, you
did.
You did? I prevented you from closing it.
That's right.
Yeah, well, staff answered questions, and so now you have to close the public hearing before you deliberate.
The public hearing is closed.
Mr. Chair, may I make a motion?
Please do.
I would like to make a motion that the Planning Commission adopt a resolution 15 next in order entitled A Resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Goleta, California, recommending to the City Council adoption of the housing element, related zoning regulations, and definitions ordinance.
Second.
Vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Hearing none, hearing all five of us, there are zero no's. Let the record show it passes 5-0. Thank you. Thank you for your concern and good thoughts. We appreciate it. Now we're going to the director's report.
Thank you, Chair. I'd just like to introduce our newest Planning Commissioner, Katie Maynard. We didn't do it at the beginning of the meeting, but welcome. I don't know if you'd like to tell the rest of the commissioners anything about yourself.
Thank you very much, Ms. Carmen. It's wonderful to be here today, and I'm excited to serve with my other commissioners here. I am a resident of Old Town Goleta and excited to be representing my neighborhood here as part of the community. I'm an alumni of UCSB, an active member of the Santa Barbara Bicycle Coalition, and excited to dive into the issues that are present to the committee.
Thank you. So just to update you on some recent projects, the Cortona Apartments was approved at Council last week, so that project will be moving forward. And also the calendar, given that that was one of our last big projects that's been longstanding and we're getting old applications finished, it currently right now the schedule looks like we may have a break in the next meeting, but we're going to finalize that this week and we will let you know whether or not you have another Monday off. But as things move forward, we are working on the zoning ordinance, trying to get that administrative draft out so we have lots of time to spend together over the summer and the fall. But things are coming together. You know, housing element was number one, and it's just nice to see all the bricks falling into place. So thank you for everything that you're doing with the review. You're helping us move Goleta along quite well. Thank you.
Thank you, Director. Anything from the Planning Commission?
Mr. Chair, just an observation I noticed going around town that I wanted to pass along to staff. Northbound Kyriel, as you come to the Fairview intersection, that far left turn lane has signage up above that is suggesting that you can't get on 101. And the on-ramp at 101 is now open again, and so that left turn lane signal, or sign rather, should be readjusted correctly. So,
thank you for that.
And I don't know if that's a Caltrans thing or if that's a city sign, but anyhow.
And I just wanted to add, if any of you noticed the newspaper article this morning, the county recently received Caltrans actually received a large portion of funding, and they will be resurfacing 101 in Goleta. We don't know a date yet, but it is coming. So.
You have something to say?
I do. Something that I'd like to, I'm not sure what our position is, but on airport property along Hollister Avenue in Goleta, there are a couple of projects coming. The DRI facility, and I saw in the paper this past weekend about another multiple unit commercial development. So I think it would be appropriate for us to understand how Goleta is represented and protected in that process. And what discussion would be appropriate here?
That would be great. Actually, the council recently established an airport ad hoc committee. And so, because they're also very interested in what's happening on that property, and especially with the relocation of DRI. The first meeting, I can't remember the date offhand, but I will definitely explore that with the city manager, and we'll figure out a way to get everyone involved in discussions there. And what is really nice to know is when this issue first came up, we have had an excellent response from the city of Santa Barbara, and they want to sit down and collaborate with the city.
Great. One other item, I think we, as a planning commission, are probably a little behind in some of our training, our ethics training, our conflict of interest. But something else that I just got an email from, and maybe some of the other commissioners did, is the League of Cities is doing a planning commission academy, if you will, in March. And that may be of some consideration. I have no idea what kind of a budget the commission is allowed, but that obviously may be beneficial for some or all of our members.
Yes, thank you for the reminder. We'll be sending out an email, including the program so far for that. It's in Newport Beach this year, mm-hmm. So that may be more accessible for all of you than if it was up north in Monterey. I'm also looking at our budget numbers to see what's available for that trip, if all of five of you are interested. Mm-hmm. And this year, it's actually two tracks. There's a beginning track and advanced track, depending on which you're most interested in. For those of you who have gone in past years, it's now more of a classroom experience than a conference. It used to be a conference, more conference style. But I've heard it's very beneficial since they've changed the format and sort of split it into different tracks. So we'll get that to you. You should expect an email from Wendy later this week.
Thank you. Motion to adjourn. Did you have something?
I just wanted to note on the trainings that I also just completed my ethics training, so I'm up to date on that now, too.
You're ahead of us.
I move to adjourn, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Second?
Aye.
All in favor, say aye, please.
Aye.
There were no noes, clerk. 5-0. That's a.